Welcome back to Clarity Quote to Cash Podcast. I'm Sergey Yermakov, your host today. My guest is Mike Curl, and Mike is covering SAP advisory as a part of European Center of Excellence at Capgemini. And today's topic will be servitization and business readiness to meet growing customer requirements. Servitization is a process of building revenue streams for manufacturers from services. However, many businesses find it difficult to transform from the manufacturing organization into the service provider. So I think that we will uncover like very good insights today on how to basically move forward faster and with lower risk. So Mike, good to have you on the show. I will let you introduce yourself before we start.
Great, and thank you for having me, Sergey. So my name is Mike Curl. I've been at Capgemini for about 3 years now, and I work in our central SAP advisory team. So I work with our customers across Europe, helping them with their SAP strategies, roadmaps, assessments, business cases, those sort of activities. So very much the advisory piece when we're shaping our projects and working out how best we can help our customers.
Thank you. I think your part in the project is essential, because before actually a project starts, we see many customers that are having a lot of questions that should be solved, answered, and before they really start thinking about the technology component in the project.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sort of the why are we doing this? You know, most SIs and vendors are good at sort of the how. Yes. How are we going to do it? But making sure people understand what they're going to get and the benefits of spending.
No, that's exactly my experience. We see more and more customers where we spend a lot of time before we actually start implementation activities with the selected technology. Yeah. Okay, good. So I would like to start with a little bit of a history here. For me, when I started going deep into the servitization topic, it was a big surprise that this technology, not technology, but this process appeared almost 35 years ago. And the initial idea for manufacturers was the simple question on how do they differentiate themselves from the competition. And as we know, services are a very good way to really do it, because you are increasing the value of your product for the end customer. So what is your perspective on this? How do you see the servitization has evolved over the time, and what was the critical components that businesses address with the servitization as the process?
Yes, I mean, fascinatingly, I think one of the earliest documented examples of servitization is, you know, everybody knows this, I think, you know, Rolls-Royce Power by the Hour, but that was actually trademarked in 1962. So, you know, that predates IT systems. And, you know, so my big question is, how were they actually doing it at the time? You know, they were probably just asking customers, you know, how many hours has this engine been flown? And it was written down in a notepad somewhere, because that was before any form of technology, really. I found that fascinating to see how far that example goes back. And it's obviously, you know, stood the test of time. But I think that's, you know, one of the themes that I've certainly seen over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years, that, you know, many organizations have tried to adapt and offer these sort of models where you bundle things together, you know, so you're bundling a physical product and the services and some software and some after sales together. But I'd say it's only really in the last, you know, 5 or maybe 10 years, if I was being generous, that the system side of things has been able to actually support the use cases and the scenarios that businesses want to run. And before, I think it just wasn't really practical to do it at scale, because it was hard to automate, lots of manual processes, etc. So I think, you know, really the time is now, I think, for servitization, because technology's finally caught up, and, you know, the range of things that businesses want to do, we can now actually support from the IT side.
Yes, exactly. So I think that technology is enabling the whole servitization as the model these days. But before we go into the technology discussion, let's quickly cover the different levels of the servitization maturity, as it is called. So there are different types of the services that are being provided. bundled with the core products, starting from the basic services, going into the intermediate services, and then it's basically going into the outcome services, outcome-based services, advanced services. So could we just spend a little bit more time basically uncovering these components and see what's usually customers are including in the, for example, base services and intermediate and the others?
Yes. So I guess the most simplistic form that certainly I see is really a piece of physical equipment bundled together with maybe a warranty or some form of after sales service. You know, bronze, silver, gold packages, those sort of things are quite easy to put together. Maybe sort of spare parts or training or software. So, you know, that sort of bundling of physical and the intangibles together and then just charging for it in a slightly more creative way. So could be just sort of a subscription or, you know, not charging, you know, not multiple invoices, one combined invoice for combined products and services, probably is the most basic scenario.
Would you consider things like condition monitoring as the part of the base services?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, when, for example, we are providing the maintenance and we are looking after the equipment, our SLA is basically includes the not only providing the services, the maintenance services for the equipment, but providing also the predictive maintenance services. Would it be the part?
I'd probably say that's the...
Sorry.
I'd say that's probably, you know, our sort of the middle ground, that's slightly more sophisticated than, you know, I guess you're taking more ownership of the service. So you're monitoring it on behalf of customers. You're trying to, you know, that's, I guess, more added value for the customer. Therefore, you can potentially, you know, charge more for it. And, you know, that's probably a second step for customers, I would say.
Okay, so then the second is like more sophisticated way of providing services. And here, when we are already introducing some services that we could charge based on the real consumption.
Exactly, and that's where sort of the intelligent products with you know, sensors in them, so it's sort of, you know, usage and consumption. So, you know, you might have tiered pricing that for the first 1,000 hours it's at this price, and then the next 1,000 hours are a lower price, and that assumes that you've got something that can actually, you know, provide that intelligence built into the product. So often what we're seeing is that some of our customers, you know, need to build that intelligence into a future version of the product. I mean, some of the manufacturing organizations I work with have managed to retrofit that to older machines. So, you know, a packaging customer of mine, they've managed to retrofit sort of sensors to machines that are in some cases 30 or 40 years old. But typically it's much better to redesign the product to have that as a sort of a native capability. You know, there's networking, you know, things to think about. There's, you know, where the asset is going to be located, etc. But yeah, you know, that middle usage and consumption is probably the sort of second layer of sophistication that we see.
Okay, and the third layer is like, it is more, I would say, customer centric and more complete service offering that where we could already introduce our core product as the service.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really where the manufacturer or supplier sort of takes full responsibility for, you know, maintaining the asset in fully functioning state and sort of providing the outcome to the end customer that they actually want. So, you know, you've got to design it in such a way that you're guaranteeing the outcomes and the benefits of your product and, you know, structuring the commercials around success so that, you know, if your product isn't available or isn't working at 100% efficiency or what have you, you know, you potentially feel some pain of that. So it's, you know, you're fully incentivized to to get the thing back to operating as quickly as possible, but you're providing that wrapper and monitoring and end-to-end service for the customer. You know, you've taken a problem away for them.
Okay, so, and yes, and this is, I would say, the top of the pyramid, because the servitization usually draws as a pyramid where we have like our like maximum value provided to the customer. And this is the point where we are introducing already the pricing model where customer would pay based on the outcome or the value they get from the services that we're selling.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the sort of, it's the holy grail of servitization. It's just, you know, it's a journey, I guess. So it's sort of, yeah, the final step, because you need a lot of trust between yourself and customers. And typically people move to, you know, organizations move to that over a period of time, and maybe with just a few select customers to start with before scaling it to offering it to everybody.
Exactly. So would you see this third level of maturity as the complete outsourcing of the manufacturing to the service provider, or is it something that still would be the mixed model?
I think sort of outsourcing everything is, I guess you've got to work out what really is the differentiating capability of the organization. And in a lot of cases, they still continue to sort of manufacture their products. But once they're manufactured, taking ownership of actually shipping the product, you know, the equipment, getting it to its end location, so managing the logistics, handling the training. So, you know, I've worked with a medical device imaging company, and, you know, they still make the product, but as soon as it's ready to be shipped, the, you know, the outsourced servitization provider makes sure it gets to the hospital, the people are trained on it, that the monitoring is put in place so that they can, you know, keep an eye on it remotely. And actually the next level of sophistication they're looking at is diagnostics as a service, where they will actually provide the medical imaging sort of professionals and, you know, charge on an outcome for that, really. So yeah, I think it's sort of maybe harder to outsource the manufacturer of complex assets, but from when it is ready to go, then it's very easy to offer that end-to-end service.
Okay, it's very interesting. So if you would like provide the one very simple example of every the maturity stages and the customers who are doing it like the best way from your perspective. So what would be like the cases, the use cases? We're not necessarily speaking here about the customer naming them, but it could be just a use case. What would be your examples here?
Yeah, so I guess probably mixing domestic and sort of industrial. That, you know, I've recently bought a new boiler. The old one died. So obviously buying the boiler from, you know, a German manufacturer, there was the option to buy a combined sort of care package along with that. So that included sort of two free call outs and parts at reduced cost, but they also gave me the opportunity to sort of pay for the new boiler over a 36 month or sort of 60 month time frame. So that was great for me, because I got sort of more value, and I was able to split the cost. So it was great for my cash flow. So really, you know, quite a simple example of a new piece of equipment and a service care package put together, rather than me taking the upfront cost and then, you know, every time the boiler was broken down, having to try and find someone to come and fix it for me. You know, they endeavored to provide that service. I didn't see any SLAs written down for how quickly they'd fix it, but luckily hasn't broken down yet.
Okay. And so this would be like the very simple example, right, of the basic services that, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, if we are moving in the more advanced intermediate services, what do you see here as the good example? Would it be services like we see around, like heating, cooling, lighting as a service, these types of the services?
Yeah, I think so. Although, so, you know, those can actually almost be the sort of the fully outcome based as well. Those are sort of easier, I guess, to automate and monitor. So I've certainly seen, you know, for heating as a service for laboratory facilities, where it was really important to the end customer that the sort of the temperature was kept within a sort of a 1 degree range in the laboratory. So the you know, heating and cooling provider provided sort of a guarantee that they would do that, you know, with incentive and penalty clauses to match, which is quite a nice one. And definitely, yeah, lighting as a service, although that's, you know, harder to price actually, because it's sort of you know, it depends on a lot more factors. So, you know, if the office is busy, then people are probably going to be arriving earlier or leaving later in winter. So actually having the sensors that detect presence, so, you know, I think they've, one of the customers I've worked with has just, you know, into their contracts now, they build in some variables around office occupancy and things like that, because they can't take end-to-end responsibility of that, because there are a few variables outside of their control.
Yes, exactly. And you know, with this cooling as the service where you are paying actually for the temperature in the office, I think that for the most customers, at least the complications that I see based on the building where we are located. So you should really have the very good equipment, reliable equipment in order to provide these types of the services. Because if I'm trying to apply this model to the
Yes.
building where we are, I don't think that they
Yeah.
would manage to meet the SLA for the temperature, like exact temperature in the office. So
Yeah. Well, what I have seen with lighting as a service, though, is that the sort of the manufacturers, or certainly the manufacturer that I've seen, they've redesigned their products to make them much more modular. So if something breaks, it really is a sort of a 2 minute sort of job to, you know, to replace the failed unit, rather than actually getting an electrician out to play with wires and, you know, unwire things and rewire them. It really is something that a maintenance engineer can do with no training safely, because they just unplug a module, put a new one in that clicks into place, you know, no live wires exposed. So that was quite clever.
okay, so it's coming back to the question, how many developers you need to change the light bulb here? So they're bringing this to the whole new level. Okay, so
Exactly.
and coming to the more like the top of the pyramid, the advanced services. So I think that here we would see something like transportation as the service. So the something that has like a lot of components and dependencies and the huge services portfolio behind the actual service that is provided.
Yeah, exactly, and that's you can everybody knows how complicated logistics is, especially in this sort of post-COVID you know, supply constrained world. So yeah, that is a great example of where a lot of manufacturing organizations would love to give that problem to somebody else who's an expert at global trade and international shipping and paperwork and making sure that compliance checks are done, so that you're not sort of sending dual use components to a unfriendly regime, etc. So yeah, fantastic. Complicated area where there are sort of huge benefits of somebody else managing that end to end, sort of, you know, giving you that service back and you just paying for successful on time deliveries.
Yes, exactly. So I think that we, if we look at the customer demand, so we see a lot of like, for example, postal companies, they're rethinking their pricing, and like the looking at the new systems that would allow them really to bring it to the whole new level and meet these customer expectations. So yes, I think that this is like these are the very good examples. And next thing that I wanted to discuss is in technology space. So we have touched this already previously, but let's just uncover this in a little bit more detail. So we clearly see that we have a lot of technology components that are helping us to really like work with the big data, and a lot of the IoT components that are embedded in all the almost all the equipment these days that are allowing us to gather the data about the consumption and about the usage and really predict when the maintenance is required and plan a lot of things. And I think that also the AI is the next technologies that is coming here in play. So how does it look from your perspective? What do you think, like, what are the crucial technology components that are helping businesses here?
Yes, I think, you know, all of the above. I guess what I am seeing, though, is that it's managing those things at scale is the challenge. So where you've got sort of thousands of the same asset in place that all need managing together, you know, updating firmware on thousands of remote devices, you know, from cars are a great example. So sort of managing fleets of assets is really, I think, where the next challenge is. If you've just got, you know, a few large machines that are in a heavily networked factory, you know, that's quite simple and straightforward these days. It's mobile assets and equipment where you can't always guarantee the network connectivity, and there's a lot of hope and expectations on 5G, although obviously 5G, the coverage is a lot, you know, it's not as far as existing technologies. So there's a lot more handovers from sort of antenna to antenna. So part of our organization, Capgemini Engineering, is doing a lot of sort of testing of those sort of things at the moment. But yeah, I'd say it's sort of managing assets at scale and then dealing with the volume of information that you get back. You know, it has to be automated with, you know, AI and even sort of analytics and dashboarding, so that you get a view of your entire portfolio of assets, and then you get sort of exception reports so that you can see where there might be a problem and solve it before your customers even noticed.
Okay, when it comes to AI, do you see some specific use cases already where, like, machine learning helps, or like any different types of the application of the technology?
I guess within the SAP portfolio, there's a lot of sort of inbuilt intelligence in the intelligent asset management portfolio that does those sort of things for us. So that is almost like the anomaly detection. So we've built a great sort of proof of concept for wind farms. So it's sort of from the failures that it's seeing in sort of blade failures and wind farm turbines getting stuck in the wrong direction, etc., it then knows what the early warning signs are of a potential failure. So, you know, if the wind direction and speed suddenly look a little bit like this, and the vibrations exceed a tolerance, then, you know, the wind farm can be optimized to point in a certain direction or have extra resistance put on it to slow it down a little bit and things. So the software is actually doing a lot of the heavy lifting for us already. We can actually, as consultants, just sort of look for look at the factors and what can be done to avoid anomalies and problems down the line.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm sure data engineers would love to be coding some R and some Python, but in the SAP estate, a lot of that is done for us, and we've already got the business technology platform to do sort of really clever things if we need to.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so the next thing that I think we should cover here is the actual benefit, what it means for the business, because we see a lot of things that should be planned in advance before, like, transitioning from the typical manufacturer into the service provider. We see a lot of technology that should be evaluated, selected properly, applied, and integrated into the existing landscape. But what would be basically the outcome for the businesses? So definitely this is growing profits, revenues, and utilization of the equipment. But if we, like, make one single summary, how would you put it?
Yes, I guess probably the benefits fall into sort of, you know, three categories, I guess, you know, for the manufacturer, for the customer, and maybe for the sort of, you know, for the world and the global good. So I guess for sort of the actual manufacturer, probably the single biggest one is it locks you in with into a relationship with your customer for the long term. You know, nobody wants to invest in these on a transactional basis. So it leads to a lot more customer loyalty and retention. So 3-year, 5-year contracts, which then, you know, locks out lower cost imitator products, for example. So, you know, long-term trusted relationship that gives you a longer predictable cash flow is probably the best sort of benefit in terms of the you know, for the manufacturer. You know, just harder for people to copy, leads to long-term trust and relationships. And I guess obviously for the customer or consumer, then just being charged in different ways, so not having to buy something is great, good for your cash flow, and you know, much more predictable in terms of your cash flow as well. And then I guess what we see overall is that the cycle leads to much better sustainability and asset sort of usage and reuse and decommissioning. So actually it's great for the circular economy and, you know, reducing wastage, less plastic, less landfill, etc. So yeah, you know, definitely some benefits on all sides of the equation.
And I think that this customer centricity component is super important, because usually, especially if we consider that these services are being sold on subscription basis, we should justify the value that customer gets in order to continue subscribing to our services.
Exactly, and that's one of the big learnings, I think, from the software industry. Yes. You know, SAP themselves, for example, moving from selling product to selling software, well, people don't have to renew every month. And it's the same for manufacturers. You know, if they are unhappy enough, they will take their business elsewhere, you know, no matter how uncomfortable it is. So making sure that you're continually hitting those SLAs, keeping customers happy, adding increasing value. So, you know, what we see is definitely a continuous improvement cycle. It's not sort of sell a subscription once and then walk away. You need ongoing service reviews and engineering reviews and enhance the product and service going forwards to add even more value.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, so I think that, like, if we are summarizing all the benefits here, I think that it is definitely something that businesses should consider. At least that they should be thinking about the applying servitization to their existing business models. And also had the one of the previous recordings here dedicated to how to transition from selling product into the selling subscription. So I think it might be also valuable to check that video. And so I think that it was a very good conversation. We have really discussed a lot of good things that I think would help customers to make their decision. And so, Mike, I would like to thank you for answering my questions, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And so we are happy, as always, to get your likes, feedbacks, and comments. And as usual, we are just one click away. So you can find the contact form at clarity.show. And thank you for listening, and see you in the next episodes. And please don't forget to subscribe.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Bye now.